It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up, we learn about an innovative solar energy effort in northwestern Wisconsin. First, a bill proposed by Representative Dean Knutson of Hudson is gaining some bipartisan support in the Wisconsin legislature. The bill would allow counties to institute a half-cent sales tax to raise revenues for needed road projects. Jerry Deshane joins us now for Look at the Proposal. He's the executive director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. Jerry, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for inviting me back.
So let's first look at the problem that this bill is trying to solve. What is the state of local road funding around Wisconsin right now?
In short, it's bad and getting worse. We are where we were back in 1986 in terms of how much we're investing in maintaining our local roads. What I mean by that is if you adjust for inflation, last year we spent $227 per capita in maintaining roads. That dollar amount is less than what we were investing in 1986. We've got a ways to go.
As things stand now, where does the money come from? If a local government wants to do some kind of road project or plan for it in 10, 20, 30 years, where's that money coming from?
Well, the biggest source, of course, is still the property tax. I mean, the homeowners and shop owners and manufacturing owners, that's where most local road money comes from. We get a big chunk from the state in the form of general transportation aids. There's also some shared revenues. But the bulk of it is still coming off the property tax, which, as you know, Rob, that in and of itself is part of the problem.
Well, let's talk about this sales tax idea now, allowing counties, if they want to, I think there's a referendum involved, to raise the sales tax a bit to pay for local roads. Do you see this as something that counties would jump on, would want to do around the state?
I absolutely do. Counties and local governments, towns and villages and cities, would have to work together, which, frankly, anytime you've got local governments working in collaboration, it's a good thing. But it's like a school referendum to replace the boiler. You got to make your case to the public. If the public supports it in referendum, you use it then to basically clear up the backlog of road maintenance projects.
Let's talk about that backlog now. What kind of things are we seeing in communities around the state?
I had a village president tell me that their road repair budget, because property taxes are limited, I mean, we all want our property taxes to be kept down, right? Well, what's happened is they've been deferring road maintenance. And about 6 months ago, I had a village president tell me that his road repair budget is just enough to fix the road if a water main breaks and they have to dig it up. At that rate, we're just not going to maintain what should be our most important economic asset.
We're talking to Jerry Deshane from the League of Wisconsin Municipalities about a proposal to allow counties to raise their sales tax a bit to pay for local road maintenance. Seen some criticism, Jerry, of this idea from Wisconsin, a public interest research group, saying let's actually start by taking money away from big highway projects. They say we don't need putting that money into these needed local projects instead. Do you see that as something that should be part of the solution?
Unfortunately, that math just doesn't add up. You can't stop maintaining your state highways in the name of maintaining your local roads. Now, it is true that the situation is becoming more serious at the local level, but that's simply because that's where most of the roads are. 9 out of 10 roads in Wisconsin are local roads. But to rob Peter to pay Paul is not a solution.
Are you worried that if this goes through and counties have this flexibility to raise the local sales tax for road maintenance, that then legislators will say when they look at the state contribution to roads, well, hey, counties have this source of revenue. We don't need to increase that funding. We could even cut the funding a little because they have this alternative method.
Well, again, it all comes back to the question of robbing Peter to pay Paul. Just because I raised a dollar over there to clean up a dollar's worth of backlog, that does not mean I don't have to keep maintaining my effort going forward. I would hope that they would look at this the way Texas, which has been doing this for 15 years, looks at it. If you can make your case to the local voter, trust the local voters to clear up that backlog, and then in 4 years the tax goes away, which, by the way, the bill would require.
So there'd be a sunset provision.
Yeah, this is not a forever tax, which is another argument for not replacing state road aids.
And speaking of state road aids, again, this all comes against the backdrop of a big budget battle over how we pay for roads, arguments over bonding, raising the state gasoline tax, user fees, things like that. Would some sort of statewide solution like a user fee increase or a gas tax increase be a more reliable way for local governments to get this funding for their roads?
I think Texas's experience would argue no. This is a case where, you know, the old saying that the best government is the one closest to the people would apply. In order for, you know, the village of Cadott to get access to the sales tax or the county that Cadott is located in, the local elected officials have to make their case to the local voters, and then they solve their problems locally. Frankly, I can't think of a more efficient and more effective way of getting it done than that.
And how does that work? If let's take a county like Dane County, you know, you've got Madison that might have one set of priorities, outlying communities that might have others. There are different stories, of course, in every county in the state. What if half the county wants it, half doesn't? Does that just end up being divisive within a county?
Well, I think there are some counties where it will be divisive. I think there's some counties where it will, where the citizens all over will see the need for it. And I think the answer there is trust the voters. You know, let the voters decide. Let them see what the case is. And if there's simply too much division, it doesn't move forward. If the counties and the municipalities can come up with a plan that makes sense to the local voters, then you move forward.
Make the case that this or something needs to happen. What happens if the approach to local road funding backlogs is nothing, status quo?
It won't be status quo. The potholes will get bigger, quite literally and quite figuratively. Wisconsin's economy is more transportation dependent than most state economies. We rank number two in the big transportation dependent industries, manufacturing, agriculture, and even ironically trucking. If we let that local road network go so that you can't make that last mile connection, or that you lose time, or that you're spending a lot of money on front-end alignments, for heaven's sake. That hurts Wisconsin's economy very quickly and very directly.
Now, bipartisan, Jerry, is not a word we hear a lot in Wisconsin, unless it's preceded by the phrase lack of or something like that. But this proposal has some bipartisan support in the Assembly. Looks like the Senate mostly is taking a wait-and-see approach right now. Do you think that there's enough support from majority Republicans or a combination of Republicans and Democrats that you're optimistic that this thing's going to pass?
Oh, yeah. I think that, as you pointed out, it was not only a bipartisan vote in the Assembly Transportation Committee, it was a unanimous bipartisan vote. You can't get much better than that. I think the Senate is looking at this very cautiously, but I think they'll take a look at what happened down in Texas. They'll see that it's not being abused there. They've got about 14 years of experience, and we're very optimistic that the legislature will say, yeah, you know what, we may not be able to solve all the transportation problems, but we can at least give local governments a tool to solve one of them.
Well, something to watch in 2016. Jerry, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You bet, Rob. Have a great new year.
You too. That was Jerry Duchesne. He is executive director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. He joined us to discuss a bill that would give Wisconsin counties the power to levy an additional sales tax to pay for road projects if approved by a referendum in that county. Last month, Wisconsin saw the opening of the state's newest and largest community solar project in the Eau Claire area. The cooperative for the moment is the third largest solar array in the state, and more could be on the way. Joining us to discuss the project and what a solar cooperative project is, we have Tyler Huebner in the studio. He's executive director of Renew Wisconsin. Tyler, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having us, Rob.
Well, tell us how this works. What is a community solar project?
Yeah, so most people are familiar with solar photovoltaic arrays, and you put them on your home, on your rooftop, or you can put them out in a field, and the sunlight hits them and they generate electricity. The unique aspect of this project is Eau Claire Energy Cooperative is an electricity provider, provides energy to about 10 or 11,000 customers surrounding Eau Claire and the rural areas surrounding Eau Claire. And with this type of a project, a customer can buy into either one panel or two panels, 10 panels. They have one customer that's bought over 400 panels of this larger array that they installed. It has over 2,800 panels in total. And the cooperative is able to install these larger projects and get a better price point overall, economies of scale.
And so somebody might want to be into solar, but as I understand it, a lot of our rooftops are not facing quite the right angle,
exactly,
or they're obstructed or something like that. So this is a way to get out to, out in a field somewhere where,
exactly,
there's open sunlight.
Yep, that's exactly right. So about three out of every four customers, electricity customers, actually don't have a great property for putting solar panels. Either their roof isn't a good spot, or their land isn't a good spot, or they're renters, and so they don't own the property. So these types of project models, community solar, enable all these different types of people and businesses, organizations to participate in solar when they might not be able to do it on their own property.
As I understand it, this is the biggest community solar project in the state. It's not the first, though. How many are out there at this point?
So right now there's eight that are in place. In 2014, three came online. The first one was with Vernon Cooperative in Westby, so kind of the Viroqua area, and two other ones, St. Croix and Barron. And then this year, five came online, three with electric cooperatives, and then two others, River Falls and New Richmond, which are actually municipal electricity providers. So the providing of the electricity comes through the city government.
Now, in the world of solar, I don't know what you call them, plants or fields or whatever, how does this stack up here in Wisconsin? It's among the biggest in the state, right, this new one?
This new one, yes. So it's the third biggest in the state. Epic Systems has the largest in the state right now at 2.2 megawatts. And there's a project in Jefferson, which is 1 megawatt. And this is about 8/10 of a megawatt. So... And every megawatt of solar provides about as much power to power 125 homes throughout the year.
Talking to Tyler Huebner from Renew Wisconsin about community solar projects. Well, talk us through how this would work. How does somebody get started on creating this community solar project?
Yeah, so getting started, what we've seen with some of the electric cooperatives is their members, so their customers, have actually gotten together and started conversations with their management of the electric cooperative, like the board of the cooperative, and said, hey, we're interested in this. We're hearing about it. It's a new way that customers can have the option to participate, invest in solar, and it kind of builds up from there. So we've seen that. In the case of Eau Claire Electric Cooperative, really the CEO, Lynn Thompson, has been an unbelievable champion and driver of this project, trying to bring those benefits to his members in the Eau Claire area.
So it sounds like it's mostly cooperatives that provide this. Are there options for people in cities where, say, they have a more traditional regulated utility that we think of?
Exactly. So right now we've got two of the what's called investor-owned, so Madison Gas and Electric is here serving Madison and the surrounding area, and Xcel Energy, which serves a lot of western Wisconsin. They've both proposed projects. Xcel has been approved for theirs, and they're working to get a project contractor to build those and getting all that. In 2016, they'll start marketing their program, and they're willing to build up to 3 megawatts, which would be three times as much, basically, as what Eau Claire has built here.
For the individual consumer who does this, how does this work from a money standpoint?
Yep.
They have an upfront fee, right?
Exactly. So the way that works for Eau Claire and all the other ones we've seen so far in Wisconsin is you put up, in the case of Eau Claire, it's $650 per unit, which amounts to the electricity that comes off of one solar panel. So you pay that up front, and then over 20 years, you're going to be paid back a rate. And according to the Eau Claire Electric Cooperative, those energy credits will be worth about $900 over 20 years at today's electric rates. And if electric rates go up, then you'll get paid back a little bit better. So for people that have a little bit of extra money available to them, this can be a really good way to invest in solar energy and actually get somewhat of a return, although it's not an investment vehicle, to be clear. But you can get your money back and a little bit more.
A question I imagine comes up a lot at the outset is, we are in Wisconsin, sun's going down right about now, actually not always reliable sun. Is this really a viable option here in the state?
Absolutely. You look at one of the leaders globally in solar energy is Germany, and their sunshine is about 30% worse than we have here in Wisconsin. Right now, solar energy, the value of it is really in the middle of the day when we're using more power. In the summer, we've got our air conditioners on, and even in the winter, our buildings are on, we've got lights on. Mm-hmm. It's using solar energy to provide that power in the middle of the day when our electric loads are actually higher. So it is a viable option even here in Wisconsin.
So if someone's listening saying, hey, yeah, I want to check this out in my community, mm-hmm. see if we can get the ball rolling, what kind of steps would they take to do this?
Yeah, well, certainly you can start with us. We're at Renew Wisconsin. We've got a website, renewwisconsin.org, and our contact information is there. We'd love to connect you with other customers of the same utility or other people in your geographic area that might be interested in exploring this and seeing if we can use the groundswell to get more of these projects going in Wisconsin.
As a country, it seems like the solar conversation started in the 1970s,
yep.
and a lot of people's assumptions are based on the technology available in the 1970s.
Yep.
How much has it changed, the technology available in the last, say, 30, 40 years?
Just tremendous. The cost of a solar panel is about 99% less today than it was in 1970. So the cost of installing solar has dropped about in half just in the last 5 years. And that's why utilities, businesses, farms, homes, really solar is growing at an incredible rate. About 40% more solar in Wisconsin, about 40% growth here in just the last year over what we had done the previous 30. So a tremendous growing industry.
Tyler, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
That's Tyler Huebner, Executive Director of Renew Wisconsin, talking about the newest and now largest community solar project in Wisconsin, set up by the Eau Claire Energy Cooperative. Have you listened to a good book lately? Audiobooks are booming in the United States. According to a recent Wall Street Journal article, audiobooks are the fastest growing sector of the publishing industry, earning over $1.5 billion last year. While print and ebooks are still a bigger deal, some authors are reporting that the audiobook versions of their work is actually outselling the text versions. Of course, we have a long-standing tradition of being read to here at Wisconsin Public Radio with our very own chapter a day. Here's Jim Fleming reading the currently running book, The Chimes, by Charles Dickens.
Before he merged into the darkness, the traveler stopped, and looking round and seeing Trotty standing there yet, seemed undecided whether to return or go on. After doing first the one and then the other, he came back, and Trotty went halfway to meet him. "You can tell me, perhaps," said the man with a faint smile. "And if you can, I'm sure you will, and I'd rather ask you than another, where Alderman Cute lives."
You can go to WPR.org for the rest of the story or tune into Chapter a Day tomorrow at 12:30. So are you an audiobook fan? What do you listen to? When do you listen? On the treadmill, maybe? In the kitchen? On the road? Do you have a favorite author or a favorite reader? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Jenny Arch joins us now. She's an adult services librarian at the Robbins Library in Arlington, Massachusetts, and a library blogger. Jenny, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So in your experience, what do people like about audiobooks?
Well, they like the convenience. I think they like being able to do two things at once. They definitely like the improved commute experience instead of just sitting in traffic or on the subway listening to radio or music or other people. They get to be immersed in a story, and that's a great experience.
And I chatted with you earlier. You mentioned the idea of an audiobook, and I hadn't really thought of this as a social experience.
Yes, we often, before vacations at the public library, parents and families will come in looking for an audiobook that everybody in the family can listen to if they've got a long drive coming up. So we are then looking for something that can appeal to a 5-year-old and a 50-year-old, and that's a fun challenge.
Well, I want to get into what makes a good audiobook. How important is the reader of the book, the person whose voice we're actually listening to?
It's very important, but it's also very subjective. Some people might prefer a male voice or a female voice. Some people might prefer an American accent. Some people really love British accents. And then some productions are full cast recordings, so you have different people doing the different voices. So what I recommend when people are just starting or just starting to listen to audiobooks, or if they're going on a long trip, I say take a few and listen to the first few minutes of each, and if you really hate the voice, put that one down and try a different one, because it really is just so subjective.
And this is probably subjective too, but is there a particular kind of book, or are some books written in such a way that lends themselves to be better audiobooks?
I think really any book can probably be a good audiobook. Sometimes if the author reads their own work, that can have added value, especially if it's an actor or comedian, somebody like Tina Fey reading Bossy Pants. That's just such a phenomenal production. The print book is, of course, good too, but it's, you really get a little extra if you are listening to it. But all kinds of books become audiobooks, mysteries, literary fiction, memoirs, autobiographies, really anything. So it's up to your reading taste, really.
Now, I mentioned sales figures earlier, but we could also get audiobooks from the libraries. Here in Wisconsin, we have the Wisconsin Public Library Consortium, which I'm told is the second largest collection in the country, library collection of e- and audiobooks. And you've got a similar system through the Overdrive program, I gather, in Massachusetts. So how do we borrow books from a library, audiobooks from a library?
Sure. I think a lot of people aren't aware that you can, but you can, in fact, get library or get audiobooks for free. You can download them from your library. In Massachusetts, here, our consortium also has the Overdrive platform. So you have the Overdrive app, and you just download the book to your device, computer, tablet, phone, and you go, and you get to keep it for 2 or 3 weeks, and then it sort of gets sucked back. You don't have to worry about late fees or anything. So that's a really easy way that people are doing it. But, of course, you can also get books on CD, and there are also devices called playaways where the whole book is preloaded onto a very small device that you check out of the library, and that's, you know, that can fit in your hand. It's quite convenient.
Talking to Jenny Arch. She's a librarian and blogger. We're talking about audiobooks, the rise of the audiobook, why we like to listen to them, and, of course, we want to get some recommendations, Jenny. So I'm going to start with mine. We've got listeners queued up, and I'll ask for yours. I'm a big fan, and I've said this on the show, of science fiction author Alistair Reynolds. There's an awesome reader named John Lee who does all of his books. I'm always happy when I hear his voice. I recently got through Barbara Tuchman's history book, A Distant Mirror, read by Nadia May. And then Tamim Ansari reads his own books, Destiny Disrupted, History of the World Through Islamic Eyes, and Games Without Rules. That's a history of Afghanistan. So those are my big listens lately. Jenny, let's hear some of your recommendations now.
John Lee's on my list, too, actually.
He's great. I love him.
Instructions for a Heat Wave by Maggie O'Farrell, which I thought was fabulous. Doctor Who fans, David Tennant reads a book called My Sister Lives on the Mantelpiece, which is a young adult novel by a British author, and it's just wonderful to listen to David Tennant read anything. But two of my favorites are Jim Dale, who reads the Harry Potter books, and also The Night Circus by Aaron Morgenstern, and Rebecca Lohman, who reads all of Rainbow Rowell's books, including Eleanor and Park, which is a young adult novel, and Rules of Civility by Amar Tulls. I've got a longer list, but weird.
That's a great start. And I'll mention we've got a list you did last year, actually, of recommendations on your blog. We've got that linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Some overlap there with the ones you just said, some extras beyond that, too. I want to go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Cynthia is on the line in Menominee. Cynthia, hi.
Hi. I got hooked on audiobooks because I was working on my graduate degree and had no time for going for reading, and I always have an audiobook in my CD player in my car, and some, like The Language of Flowers, I like so well as an audiobook that I actually went out and purchased a novel, too.
Okay, so you listened to it and then read the novel, too?
Yeah, for that particular one. Philippa Carr, The Red Queen, I got so frustrated
I want to read that
I had to go get the book and read it, because it was frustrating me, and I had to get through it to find out how it ends.
Cynthia, thanks so much for sharing your experience and your reading. I actually do something the opposite of Cynthia, where, like with those Alistair Reynolds science fiction books I've mentioned, I've read them in print, and now I get to re-enjoy them in audio format. Do you see, Jenny, either you yourself or other people rereading with audiobooks?
Yeah, that's actually how I got into audiobooks in the first place. I wasn't sure if I'd be able to concentrate on driving and listening at the same time, so I chose a book that I'd already read. So then if I tuned out for a sentence or a paragraph, it was not a big deal. And then I started reading books that I hadn't read before. But re-listening or rereading via audiobook is a great thing to do.
And then our caller mentioned CDs. And I didn't get into audiobooks in the time of cassettes and CDs because there's so many. One example, I one time looked at the George R. R. Martin Game of Thrones book.
Mm-hmm.
28 CDs. And that's for book one. And there's, you know, an infinite number of books coming out eventually, it looks like. So the new technology where the whole thing's just on your phone, I'm guessing has led a lot of people to embrace this, like me, who may not have previously.
Yeah, I think that's true, although CDs are still pretty popular and reliable. And I mentioned the playaway format earlier, which I think is exclusive to libraries. But there's also some bookstores will let you rent audiobooks on CD, so you borrow it for a week and then return it. So it's like a library, but not free. But the digital form is definitely convenient.
Go back to our callers. Christopher is on the line in Appleton. Christopher, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you have for us?
Well, I just got to say that I am not a really strong reader, but I do like, you know, the different worlds that you can be taken to by a novel. So I started reading a book, The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan, and I struggled through it. I couldn't really concentrate. Then I found that it was on an audiobook, and I listened to the whole thing in probably 2.5 days. And the great part about that was there were 12 more books in the series
I was going
to
say.
Also listen to.
Yeah, that's going
to
keep you going for a long time there, Christopher. That series, I read about 9 books in and I kind of petered out. But that is a great find. Thank you for sharing that, Christopher. And that reminds me, Jenny, he mentioned somebody who's not a strong reader, but also people with visual impairments. Somebody in my family had a stroke and can't read like he used to. Audiobooks are filling in the gap. And there's actually special library programs in every state, I think, who provide those services.
Yeah, it's a great way for those with visual impairments to continue reading, and those are fantastic services that should be free to anyone. All you have to do is register.
We are talking to Jenny Arch. She's a librarian and a blogger looking at audiobooks. They're booming. A lot of people getting into them, listening to their favorite works for the first time or maybe a re-listen. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you like or not like, for that matter, about audiobooks? Do you listen? Do you have a favorite book, author, or reader? And when and where do you listen? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about audiobooks and why people like them, what they like to listen to. We've got librarian and logger Jenny Arch with us now. And, you know, they're a big growing ingredient, a segment of the publishing industry. A lot of people buying them, borrowing them from the libraries. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you listen to audiobooks? How, what, and where? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Before I take another caller, I want to share a comment from Facebook. Randy writes, my kids' favorite audiobooks are ones that I recorded for them myself. Every birthday and Christmas, they ask for a recorded book. I choose a favorite, weave in some music. They're far from professional, but they're treasured nonetheless. They're a gift that lasts a lifetime. I'd encourage other parents to do the same in our age of smartphones with audio recorders. It's easier than ever. I love that. Thanks a lot, Randy. Back to our callers now. Dorothy is on the line in Oshkosh. Dorothy, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I am a really big fan of audiobooks because I take a lot of long road trips. I have a mother. I live in Oshkosh, and I have a mother out in western Montana and a couple of daughters in Denver and a son out in L.A. And I actually haven't taken a road trip to L.A., but I have taken many road trips to western Montana across I-94 and down to Denver over lots of various roads. But the audiobook really keeps you company, and people ask me, don't you get bored taking such a long road trip and all those hours in the car? And No, I don't, because the books are so entertaining. I can hardly wait to get back in the car after a stop.
Dorothy, thanks so much. A great story there. And Jenny, I think a great appeal of audiobooks for me is that it can take a boring task like a long drive, or for me, using the treadmill, right? Nothing more boring than that. It actually makes it something that's fun and you can look forward to. Do you have something like that too?
Absolutely. I do listen to them during my commute, which is blessedly short now, about 15 minutes each way, so maybe half an hour a day of an audiobook, which really brightens the time in the car. I know I have friends who listen to audiobooks while they clean the house, and I've recently been listening to audiobooks while I nurse my infant daughter. So,
congratulations. That's a great use of an audiobook, actually. I want to share a comment from Mimi in Madison, who emails saying, Michelle Good is my favorite audiobook reader, one of our readers on Chapter Day here at Wisconsin Public Radio. She's sitting right across the console from me as our technical director, so I pretty much have to say that one out loud. back to our callers. Jerry is with us in Elkhart Lake. Jerry, hi.
Hi. How you doing this evening?
Good. What's your story, Jerry?
I drive truck, been driving it for over 30 years, and at one point I had over 1,200 books on cassette until they came out with CDs back in 1997. The first one that came out was The Hobbit. I ended up turning my CD player into a cassette player. I now rent them from the library. I go through anywhere between 2 to 6 books every 3 to 4 weeks.
Wow.
It's like driving down the road and watching a movie through your windshield, but yet still paying attention. A lot of the authors, it depends on who's reading the book, such as Lee Child. I started out with like a third book of his series and went to the library and said, look, this ain't right. I missed something here. And got a list of all of his in order, and then just order them before I get home and go through the series as be. Not that you come to find out he's fixing a wound that's in his side. You never heard about him getting shot 2 books later, you know?
So, Jerry, I got to ask, you are probably the leading expert on audiobooks, having listened to so many. Do you have an all-time favorite?
I really do like Lee Child.
Okay.
Patricia Cromwell. I'm not a fan of James Patterson, but I'm not into the war type stuff. More of detectives, westerns. I wish there were more westerns like Louis L'Amour on CDs. I've seen one name that I haven't been able to find the CDs, but there are no westerns in the library.
Oh, no. All right, Jerry, thank you so much for sharing that. I hope you find some good Westerns to listen to on the road. 2 to 6 books in a couple few weeks, it sounded like. Truckers, I would guess, would be a great demographic for these audiobooks, Jenny.
Definitely would.
All right. Jerry, thanks for that call. Eddie, do you know of any good Westerns out there in audiobook format? That's not a genre I read much, so I don't have any to share.
You know, it's become a less popular genre now, unfortunately, for those devoted fans. Louis L'Amour is the only one I can think of off the top of my head.
All right, publishers, Jerry needs your help. Get some Westerns out there on audiobook. Next, we go to Jackie in Brown Deer. Jackie, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share that I love audiobooks. I listen to them nearly every night before bed, and one of the things that has really kind of made the reading more accessible to me now is the immersion reading between like Kindle and Audible have kind of paired up where some of the books you can listen to them as an audiobook and then switch over to reading them as an ebook, and then even at the same time you can be looking at the ebook and listening to the audio. So it's made it a lot easier for me to get through books. Being busy, I can still sit down and read the book on the ebook, but then I can also switch over to the audiobook and just listen while I'm washing dishes or doing something else that I have to get done.
Jackie, thanks so much. That's an interesting way to read. And Jenny, that reminds me, you mentioned a colleague who listens to audiobooks in kind of an unusual way that I don't know if I can get into. Could you tell us about that?
Yes. One of my librarian friends listens to audiobooks at twice the speed. She says that she really enjoys doing it that way, and now as a regular speed sounds normal to her. But it did take her about a year of sort of adjusting the speed incrementally bit by bit. So now she says she can listen to a book faster than she can read one in print.
Speed reading in a weird way. Well, I got to ask, Jenny, what are you listening to now?
Right now, I am re-listening to Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, and also The Golden Compass by Philip Pullman, and that's one of those full cast recordings that's just wonderful. And then this past year, more recently, I've enjoyed Neil Patrick Harris's audiobook, Choose Your Own Autobiography. It's a memoir in a Choose Your Own Adventure style. And Aziz Ansari's book, Modern Romance, was also great in audio. I mentioned Tina Fey before. Sarah Vowell, I really love her voice. I find that it's a little bit divisive. People either love it or hate it.
Well, Jenny, we have to leave it there. Jenny, thanks. It's been a lot of fun.
Sure.
That's Jenny Arch, Adult Services Librarian at the Robbins Library in Arlington, Massachusetts. We've got a link to a library blog post she had about audiobooks on the Central Time Facebook page where you can share your own recommendations.